and welcome back to Hero Hype. It's episode 51. Sorry for the impromptu hiatus, but we're back. As always, if you want to get a hold of us and get involved in the conversation at all, you can hit us up on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast, or drop us an email at herohypepodcast@gmail.com. But who is us? Well, me. I'm Danya, hello, and as always, joined by my co-host Caitlin.
Hello.
And so I guess, where were we? Well, the first week when we didn't record, it was kind of a hiccup of scheduling ridiculousness, not being able to make our schedules align at all. And then after that, well, I ended up getting sick, and Caitlin's been sick. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of just that time of the year where, like, things just, like, you either get sick or you've got a lot on. So, yeah, we couldn't get our schedules to line up, and then we both got sick, which, you know, A+. Good job.
Yeah, and I'm sure you can hear in my voice, I am still getting over being sick. I'm very sick of being sick.
Yeah, but we're back. We're going to talk about everything that was on while we were kind of on a little break. But yeah, so we've got quite a few things to get through, so we're just going to jump straight into it with a brief history. And this week I've got a brief history of Savitar for you. So though his true identity and name is unknown, Savitar began his life as a Cold War pilot for a third world nation. He was chosen to test the first supersonic fighter jet, but as he reached top speed, the plane was struck by lightning and he went down in hostile territory. He discovered that he could move at super speed, easily defeating any enemies he came across, and decided to adopt the name Savitar after the Hindu god of motion. Savitar became obsessed with speed, studying and tapping into powers that no other speedster had mastered. He discovered he could protect himself in a null inertia force field, give speed and kinetic energy to objects or people, and heal his injuries almost instantly. This obsession led to him gaining a cult-like following. Eventually, he made his headquarters in Tibet and recruited Lady Flash to his cause, using her powers as a catalyst to strip Earth's speedsters of their link to the Speed Force before transferring those powers to his followers instead. Wally West, who had a direct link to the Speed Force, managed to prevent Savitar from stealing his speed and teamed up with the many speedsters Savitar had tried to kill to stop him for good. Savitar wanted to destroy the Flash's world as revenge for his plans being foiled, until the Flash decided to give Savitar what he truly wanted, a union with the Speed Force. So, why Savitar? Because we got a little bit of a reveal on the Flash this week. Yeah, this week. So, we'll get into that when we start talking about the actual episodes.
Yeah, but before that, we'll jump right into the TV news. So we'll start with the DC side. And we had a few pieces of Legends of Tomorrow. First, Legends of Tomorrow got an order of 4 more episodes. So it originally had an order of 13 episodes for season 2. And the CW is ordering another 4 to make the total 17. So that bodes well for it being renewed, I'd say, for them getting another batch of episodes.
I mean, it's not like a back order, but the CW is kind of unconventional in respect to like the numbers of episodes it orders and when it does its renewals. And so you can't really judge the CW by traditional, like, like the traditional way of being able to tell whether a show is going to be renewed or not. But they're definitely ordering 4 more episodes bodes very well for the fact that it's going to return for a season 3.
I'm guessing because Legends of Tomorrow is higher rated than some of their other shows, it's behind The Flash, Supergirl, Arrow, and Supernatural, but higher rated than everything else.
Yeah.
So I imagine they're probably seeing some of their other shows like really dipping, going, well, this everything else has a full season order. We have room to pick up episodes here, so let's do that, and we'll be guaranteed better ratings.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not really gonna turn my nose up at a few more episodes of Legends of Tomorrow this season, so.
Though I am a little concerned because last season it did feel like the season was padded out and it was 16. So
I would imagine, though, that they've got a plan through to, like, the number of episodes they've currently got. So I don't know if they're going to... I don't know how they're going to adjust that plan.
Yeah, that's where my concern is. Like, do they, like, save their finale and just, like, throw four more episodes in, or what? Like, how are they going to do that?
Guess we'll wait and we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really enjoying Legends this season. I feel like they've kind of got a handle on what makes this show work well, so I'm definitely happy to see more.
Yeah.
All right, so we also got synopses for the 4-episode Heroes versus Aliens crossover coming up next week, which is the big 4-series crossover. We also got a big 2-minute trailer that I did not write up, but is kind of awesome. But just briefly to go over the synopsis. So we'll have the crossover starting with Supergirl. The episode will be titled Medusa, and it's going to be their Thanksgiving episode. It reads that Eliza comes to town to celebrate Thanksgiving with her daughters. Alex decides it's time to come out to her mother. Kara is shocked when Eliza suggests Mon-El has feelings for her, and Wynn and James consider telling Kara the truth about the Guardian. Meanwhile, Cadmus unleashes a virus that instantly kills any alien in the vicinity, so Kara enlists an unexpected ally, Lena Luthor. The epic superhero crossover kicks off tonight when Barry Allen and Cisco Ramon seek Kara's help with an alien invasion on their Earth. So we will see Barry and Cisco to start off the crossover.
I'm just so excited for Barry and Kara to basically be interacting again. Slightly more dire circumstances this time around, because it's an alien invasion, but
yeah.
whereas last time it was all sunshine and ice cream and smiles, so I don't know how much of that we'll get this time around.
My biggest disappointment is that Wynn is not going to be involved in the crossover, so he and Cisco can't hang out, so I'm like, maybe Wynn will be around when Cisco comes with Barry.
Wait, Wynn's not gonna...
No, because it's just Kara coming over to the Arrowverse Earth.
I'm like, if you could see my face right now, I'm like, not happy. Damn it! I really want to see Wynn interacting with, like, other people. Oh, man!
Well, that'll be for maybe the musical crossover.
Oh my god, if they did a musical crossover and we didn't get to see Wynn singing, I would literally flip a table.
Well, obviously Wynn will be singing. It's whether he and Cisco get to interact at all. But anyway, so the crossover then will go to Tuesday, where it'll be on The Flash, and then The Flash, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow are all titled Invasion, so we'll just... Invasion exclamation point. So it's not even like part one, part two, and part three. It's just Invasion. So the Flash episode synopsis. When aliens called the Dominators attack Central City, Barry speeds over to Star City to ask the Green Arrow for help in stopping them. Realizing the battle against the Dominators is bigger than they thought, they track down the Legends of Tomorrow, and Barry and Cisco create a breach to bring back a secret weapon, Supergirl. Once all of the super friends are assembled, they come up with a plan to attack, but a shocking secret related to Flashpoint is revealed, and suddenly no one is sure who they can trust. Meanwhile, Wally wants to join the battle against the aliens, but Iris tells him he's not ready. So, shocking, there's a big secret revealed. It would be a Arrowverse show if there wasn't.
Yep. And so, surprise, surprise, it's to do with Flashpoint.
Shocking.
So shocking.
And then we move to Wednesday for Arrow, and this will be Arrow's 100th episode as well.
Oh my God, 100 episodes.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So the synopsis is, Oliver wakes up to a life where he never got on the Queen's Gambit. Robert and Moira Queen are alive and well. Laurel is his loving fiancée, and their wedding is imminent. Everything's seems perfect, but Oliver starts to notice small imperfections that make him question this new reality. Meanwhile, Felicity and the recruits take on a new threat with help from the Flash and Supergirl.
Interesting.
So that is how they're getting all those characters back.
Yeah.
That we were wondering about.
Yeah, we were wondering about it and being like, wait, what? But, hey, I guess it is what it is.
Well, we'll see. It may be kind of great. And plus Laurel and Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be good to see Laurel and Sarah interacting again.
All right. And then the crossover ends on Thursday with Legends of Tomorrow, when the synopsis is that after learning the Dominator's plan for the world, the Legends must work together with the Flash, Supergirl, and Green Arrow to kill them once and for all. Meanwhile, Stein figures out with the help of others how he can terminate the Dominator, but is distracted by the aberration he realizes he created in 1987, which we found out about in the last episode.
Grief. Yeah.
And then just one other note, in 2017, Legends of Tomorrow is going to change time slots to Tuesdays at 9 after The Flash, so starting on January 24th.
What?
So it'll be two shows on Tuesday, it'll be Monday, two shows Tuesday, and Wednesday for the shows.
Good grief. that's one way to keep us busy, I guess.
Yeah. So I get to recap two shows a night again. I was enjoying not having to do that since I dropped Supernatural.
I kind of like the fact that we had everything like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Like that was really nice for me, but okay, fine. Tuesday it is.
So yeah. That is what we can expect this coming week with the big crossover that I am just ridiculously excited about.
Yes.
And then, the best news of all time ever. we learned that we will be getting a Young Justice Season 3. So the animated series that featured the proteges of the Justice League characters then having their own team is going to be getting that long rumored and long awaited third season. And it sounds like it's probably been in production for a little while, so that's very exciting. So it says that the new season promises new twists, turns, and dangerous new threats for the team, but most importantly, the opportunity for fans to finally continue the adventures of some of their favorite superheroes.
The sound I made when I saw this news was unholy. Like, I made the highest pitched screech and then burst into tears. I was genuinely a mess. I'm so happy, though. So, so, so happy. Because Young Justice was cut off in its prime. It was really annoying that they cancelled it. And the reasons why they cancelled it was absolutely...
Because have cooties.
Yeah. It, for anyone who isn't aware of why they cancelled Young Justice, and why that joke kind of happened then, basically the Young Justice fandom was predominantly made up of women, and they wanted to be able to sell merchandise, and they weren't getting the target audience that they wanted, so they cancelled it because women liked the show, and they wanted boys to like it.
Yep. So I will be very surprised if this goes back to Cartoon Network. They're not saying when or where it's going to air, but because it sounds to me like from the way the rumors were flying for a while there that because of all the people watching it on Netflix, it would not surprise me if Netflix picked it up.
I want Netflix to get it, honestly. Considering how happy I am with a lot of the animated shows that Netflix has been heading up, particularly Voltron Legendary Defender, which if you guys haven't watched that, go watch it. Shameless plug for a show that's not related to anything superhero-based. But they treat animated shows really, really well, like they do with a lot of their original series, so I would be very happy to have Young Justice Season 3 at home on Netflix.
But yeah, so we don't know much more other than
that it's happening!
That the series creators are coming back, yes. So it'll be all the key people that you want involved. And it's happening!
It's happening! Oh, we are definitely going to have to fold that in to be like a show that we cover just because... Just because. There's, like, no reason other than just because I wanna.
I'll recap it if I have to. I will do another DC show if I have to.
Yeah, right? Right? Oh, man. That's kind of it for DC news. Two little bits of Marvel news. One slightly bigger than the other, to be honest. So I'll just touch on the not surprising bit of news. The Defenders has added two more characters to the roster. So we are going to be getting Elodie Young as Elektra and also Jessica Hennick, who is going to be playing Colleen Wing in the upcoming Iron Fist. Both of those ladies have been added to the Defenders, which probably shouldn't be surprising to any of us, really. It is literally just a best of the best kind of thing going on. So, yeah, not really much to say about that other than we were mostly just waiting for the confirmation because we probably could have guessed it. The news that probably none of us could have guessed would have been happening is that Marvel has announced that The Inhumans is now going to be a series for ABC, and its first two episodes are going to debut in IMAX, and you will be able to go and watch them in the cinema, and then the rest of the series will move to TV. So, yeah, this is going to focus a lot on the Inhuman royal family and Black Bolt. They're saying that it's probably going to cover separate territory from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but, like, I have a theory that potentially what's going to happen is they're going to phase out Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and replace it with Inhumans.
That was my first thought.
Yeah.
After seeing this.
Yeah. They're saying that they're separate, but I don't think that's gonna be the case.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. hasn't been the success that I think they wanted it to be.
Yeah.
So.
And because it's because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is so heavily relied on the Inhumans in its like core mythology now, like the whole thing is based around Inhumans. It doesn't make any sense that they would push forward with the Inhumans as a movie because the focus has been on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I could imagine that something like the Inhuman Royal Family or Black Bolt could eventually get wind of the fact that the Inhumans are operating on Earth and the situation has gotten a little out of hand and eventually, basically this is 8 episodes initially, all of which are being filmed with IMAX cameras, interestingly, which means that the picture quality is going to be insane. But, yeah, I would imagine that it's going to be separate to start with, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will continue on with its own storyline, and Inhumans will introduce Black Bolt and the royal family, and it'll sort of come together, and I would imagine then that Inhumans will basically incorporate in the characters from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and, depending on the popularity, will carry on from there. They do keep saying that, you know, the Inhuman series is not going to impact the fate of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but, you know.
It's really telling that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been on hiatus the last 3 weeks because November is a sweeps month when shows want their best episodes to be on the air. And ABC completely kept Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. off the air during a sweeps month, which is, it's telling.
It's crazy. That's what it is. It's completely crazy. And, you know, I'm not buying any of their everything is fine, situation normal stuff that they're reporting on. I would legitimately put money on it if there was an opportunity to bet on this specific outcome. but yeah. What do you think about them changing tracks for the Inhumans and bringing it to TV instead of it being a movie?
It sounds if, like, they are moving it to TV that there's just more story there than they have room to tell in a film.
Yeah.
So I can be totally fine with that. I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with them moving to television because, as we've seen, you know, DC's television is better than their films. So we could get a very good story out of it. But I do think that does not bode well for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, I don't either. I'm excited that we're actually going to get the Inhumans, as in the Inhuman characters that I'm very familiar with, and they're going to be coming to the forefront, and we get to see the royal family and all of that. I'm glad that it's not completely scrapped. I'm just really hoping that it's good.
Do you think it'll tie in any of the Inhuman characters from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Probably. I would say that they will. If only because some of them are quite beloved at this point. Like, I would imagine that if they could, they would probably tie in Daisy. But
yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, especially if it, you know, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ends, it would make sense to pull some of the Inhuman characters into a show called Inhumans.
Yeah, it wouldn't make sense to just not bring them in at all. I guess as we find out more as development continues, then we'll be able to make some solid theories about it.
Watch this space.
Yeah, very interesting times.
Cool. All right. Sorry, I had to cough. Let's move on to television. So we're going to go through the episodes we missed fairly quickly. We're not going to be able to go as in-depth as we usually like to, just for time's sake. So we'll hit the main points, and if you guys have thoughts or things you want to talk about that we don't get to, please hit us up in all those places that we mentioned at the top of the show. So Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., as we mentioned, is still on hiatus, so it'll be back this coming week. So
God, I actually forgot that. I thought it, for some reason, I didn't think it was coming back until, like, the new year now. I thought that they were going to go on a break. Do we know how many episodes it's coming back for?
I assume for its, you know, full season order. It had a full season
order. No. I mean, like, how many episodes before it goes on break for Christmas? Because nobody has episodes over Christmas.
Oh, I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, me either.
Probably one or two, I would guess.
It's so ridiculous. They might as well have just held off until the new year.
Yeah, my TV tracker app has two episodes listed, and that's it.
Yeah, that is kind of silly. To me, anyway.
power. It's just very telling about what ABC thinks of how the show is doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so nothing to talk about with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so we'll move to the DC shows. So we missed Supergirl, which were Crossfire, and what was the other episode title? We didn't miss Crossfire. We missed Changing and The Darkest Place. So we had the first episode was about the parasite alien that was locked in the snow and came and overtook the guy and was really horrifying and super creepy. This episode also introduced James as Guardian.
Every time people say, like, Asgardian, I just keep thinking Thor. I'm like, not that Asgardian.
As space Guardian.
whoops.
So, I guess the big thing to talk about here is James really, you know, becoming Guardian. And, you know, I said initially that I was really not into this. I have costume fatigue across the Arrowverse of everyone needs a code name and a costume, basically. And it's nice to have characters who can help the cause without getting into a costume. But the more I've thought about it, the more it just makes a lot of sense for James for me, because he's shown over and over that he's someone who wants to help people, and he is feeling kind of left out, which he should, because he's been very underwritten this season. So I kind of like it. I'm having so much fun with him and Wynn as the man in the van.
Oh my god, seriously. Wynn as the man in the van is making my life right now. It's so great. That was the little moment, I think it was in the episode actually from this week, where he goes up against this, basically a serial killer, and, Wynn is telling him to go left, go left, go high and go left, and so he uses, like, a zip wire to try and go up and left, and then he gets hit by a grenade. And he's like, I thought you said go up and left. And Wynn is like, I didn't know that. I was getting you to avoid the bullets. I didn't realize he had grenades. And I just, every time, I'm just dying. They're so, so great. Like, their chemistry together, their relationship, just their banter in general is just so good. And I'm loving it. And I'm loving that they've got this friendship, and that they work so well together, because I think it's a great direction for both of them. I think the difference with Supergirl in respect to, like, James suiting up versus some of the other shows for me is that even though we've now got James as, like, a vigilante, he's not one of, like, many. He is just one. Everyone else operating around Supergirl pretty much is ordinary. Still. There's still so many characters that are so very human still around her. So it's not everyone suiting up. It's not everyone having alien abilities, or being from another planet, or being able to use powers, or anything like that. It's still, more than any of the other shows, quite grounded. And I think that really works in its favor, and especially with making the story with James very different from what we've seen on all of the other shows. Because they just, on all the other shows, it's so stacked with, like, heroes or superhumans or people with abilities or just some kind of extraordinary power. It just gets too much. It gets too overwhelming. Whereas Supergirl, I think, still has a good balance.
So something I wanted to talk about with this and in another plot point later is that there's very much been some parallels between Supergirl and The Flash and Arrow. They're just having some parallel storylines. So James's Guardian plotline is very much mirroring Wally's plotline on The Flash, where he is wanting to get in on the action. He wanted to become a speedster so he can go out and help Barry and fight crime. So these two, in that sense, are having very parallel stories, and I found that very interesting. And also, you know, we'll talk about in the next episode, the Guardian story very much parallels that week's Arrow episode, but we'll get to that in a second. But
yes,
what do you think about kind of James and Wally being on similar tracks?
I think it's very interesting, especially because both of them are people of color as well. So it's very interesting to see them both wanting to take back power over their own narratives, almost, and be able to, like, feel useful and feel as though they're contributing in some meaningful way. I think it's definitely very interesting that they're paralleling these two characters in particular. Yeah, I'm kind of enjoying how both stories are playing out at the moment. Wally, I think, has been significantly more reckless in his approach than James, whereas James has really thought things through a lot more, and I feel like that's probably a little bit down to personality, but also age as
well.
Yeah,
I was gonna say.
Wally James is still very, older. Yeah. Wally's still very, very young, and therefore more prone to just jumping feet first into a situation and thinking about it later. And I mean, that's very apt for someone who has become a speedster and is moving very, very quickly. Whereas James is particularly more thought out, and he's got someone there to support him through the whole thing, Win, and he's got a network of people around him to be able to kind of lean on, and he does. He knows that, like, if he's gonna go out to kind of become Guardian, he needs someone at his back. He chooses Win to help with, like, getting him suited up to protect himself. So he takes a more measured approach to it, even though he is still a little impatient at times when Wynn hasn't finished the suit. And Wynn's just like, it takes time so that you don't die.
I think it's also fitting for, like, the type of heroes that they end up being, that Wally is going to be very much like a character that is kind of offensive. He runs into the action, while as James is Guardian, that seems almost more defensive. His weapon is a shield, which is used for protecting and less for attacking, which he obviously can do, but he is very much, like, more grounded in terms of protecting and being a defender, whereas Wally is going to be very much more someone who runs into the action and is more on the offensive.
Yeah, that's definitely a good parallel between them as well, because even though the storylines are similar, there have to be some kind of differentiators in it, and I feel like that is a good way of differentiating between the two of them, because now those stories will probably go off on much more separate tracks.
Yeah. Plus, Guardian was DC's response to Captain America, so I just kind of love the idea of James being, like, Captain America, basically.
Yes. Yeah. That was kind of, I like that thought a lot. Oh, I do really like James, and I'm glad that he's getting a good, meaty storyline that doesn't necessarily center around Kara. It is very much focused on him and what he wants to do with his life and finding purpose, and also on his friendship with Wynn, which I'm just really loving.
Yeah. So, in the second episode, this was where Kara and Mon-El are kidnapped by Cadmus, and we find out who their leader is. And then we also have the parallel plot line where Guardian is being framed for murder. And this is the whole parallel to the Arrow episode, which introduced Vigilante. This episode introduces a character who is going out killing criminals in the same week that Arrow has a guy who is going out and killing criminals.
I feel like the difference here is that Supergirl very specifically framed their character, this other Vigilante character, as being in the wrong, like what they were doing, because they were basically a serial killer, where I feel like there was a little bit more leeway with Vigilante in Arrow because it's so similar to who Oliver was to in Oliver, season one. Yeah, so there's a lot more acceptance and leeway there versus versus a Vigilante character operating in Supergirl, because they're very much framed as a serial killer, and in fact does come to justice as well by the end of the episode. So they've definitely taken different tracks with their Vigilante characters on both shows, which is quite interesting. Though, again, that it's very specific parallels across all of the shows at the moment.
Kind of like, you know, they're taking place on different Earths, so they can, on both shows, start with a very similar premise and then just take them in completely different directions.
Yeah.
But yeah, so James ends up being framed for that because Guardian is always, like, very close to, like, the criminal that was getting killed. And so Wynn ends up being threatened under low pressure to tell Alex, because did you really think, like, A, she wasn't even done threatening you, and B, did you really think Alex would actually hurt you?
Yeah, I know, right?
He breaks under very little pressure and tells her that James is Guardian, so she can ask Maggie to back off. So, oh, Wynn.
Yeah.
Don't tell him your secret.
Yeah, basically. I did feel like Kara had a very interesting response to having a Vigilante like Guardian operating within that universe, in that she referenced that her cousin had once teamed up with a Vigilante who used a lot of gadgets.
And had a lot of demons.
Yeah, had a lot of demons. Batman.
And then earlier this season, you had that those people being like, we're moving back to Gotham.
Yes.
So Batman apparently exists on Kara's Earth. So that's good to know.
Yes.
But yeah, so we also had the plot line of Kara and Mon-El were kidnapped by Cadmus, and we find out that the leader of Cadmus, we were wrong. We thought it was Lena's birth mother is actually Lillian Luther. And she is being motivated by, because she thinks her poor baby Lex was wronged by Superman.
Yeah, she's slightly unhinged, which, you know, I guess that's kind of a Luther trait of sorts.
It's a good thing Lena is adopted.
Yes. She seems
to inherit that.
Yeah, she seems to be slightly more stable compared to the rest of her family. But it also makes you wonder if that's going to last. I hope it does.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about her with the whole, like, detecting an alien device and everything.
Yeah.
There's a little something sketchy about Lena.
Yes, the detecting an alien device would be, like, really bad if that got into Lillian's hands, especially with the fact that they want to wipe out all aliens. So, yeah.
Yeah. But so they needed Kara's blood to go into the Fortress of Solitude. But, oh yeah, big reveal was Hank Henshaw is alive.
Yeah.
And he is Cyborg Superman. Yeah. So David Harewood is getting even more to do, which I'm always happy to see more David Harewood on my TV. So, love it.
Yeah.
And kind of was digging the effect of, like, the one eyeball being cyborgy. Felt very Terminator.
Yeah, I really did like the effect that they had going there. It was really cool. Also, wasn't really expecting Hank to be alive. Like, the real Hank Henshaw to be alive. Yeah. Like, that was actually a surprise.
And Jeremiah.
Yes!
Kara and Mon-El escape.
Yeah.
And he kind of seemed okay, which was interesting because Lillian hinted to Alex that, like, he was really messed up.
Yeah. Which is quite interesting. Makes you wonder what's going on there.
Yeah, I wrote in my recap that I thought it would be an interesting twist if he had been working for them the whole time. Maybe not willingly, but, like,
yeah,
was working for them. Because he had a key card that he used to get them out. And I said, is that his or did he steal it? Because it'd be interesting if it was his and he was working with them.
Yeah. Yeah, that probably wouldn't go down very well with Kara or Alex, though.
Though he already has the history of being blackmailed to work for the DEO, so they'd probably be somewhat understanding.
Yeah, to a point. But
yeah, so we'll find out what's going there, but that was kind of fun. Like, surprise Dean Cain.
Yeah, there was that. There were a few really nice little reveals in this episode that kind of, like, didn't completely mess with our theories, but also were just different enough to be surprising.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. They gave us lots of information while still keeping us hanging, like, what is this Medusa thing and everything.
Yeah, because initially, like, as they were taking... Because I've got a one-track goddamn mind, essentially when they took Supergirl's blood, I started going, oh my god, oh my god, is this going to be their way of doing Kal-El? Like, is this going to be... Are they going to make him a clone of Supergirl instead of a clone of Superman? And then they use the blood to go to the Fortress of Solitude. And I'm like, you're really wanting Kal-El so badly. I just want Superboy.
I have a feeling that Mon-El is going to be their version of Superboy on the show.
No, because they're different characters. They're completely different people. Oh, that would suck. For me, that would suck.
But we will see.
Yeah.
So that's a brief overview of two episodes of Supergirl. We'll move on to The Flash, which were the episodes were, let me pull it up, Shade and Killer Frost. So Shade was kind of a red herring because that meta was, like, completely pointless. The whole episode, real focus was that Wally was being targeted by Alchemy to get his speed powers, and so they basically end up using Wally as bait to track down Alchemy, but things don't go as planned when they run into a Michael Bay Transformer named Savitar.
Yes. It does look like a Transformer. That's very...
I wrote my recap. I was like, is he more Ultron or a Transformer? I don't know.
It's kind of a little bit of both. It's definitely pulling on that kind of look. It's, yeah, it was interesting.
So let's talk a little bit about Savitar. So you did your brief history on Savitar, in yes. which he was a human.
Yes.
This does not look like a human.
No, he looks very much like some kind of cyborg kind of thing.
And only Barry could see him.
Yeah, which that was really interesting.
So it seems like maybe only speedsters can see him.
Yeah, which we'll probably get. That'll be a point that'll probably get proved or disproved when Wally comes, I guess, face to face with him. Now that he's Kid Flash.
Now that he's gone through Terra Genesis.
Yep.
Oh, because that's exactly what that looked like.
Yeah, when he went into the little cocoon thing.
So Wally gets his speed powers. They run into Savitar, and he has... So it turns out that Alchemy and his followers are all followers of Savitar. That was a big reveal, because we thought Alchemy was a big bad, and then that Alchemy was working alongside Savitar. No, it turns out he is a follower of Savitar. Yes. So he's an acolyte himself.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then in Killer Frost, the episode kind of is what you would expect. Caitlin uses her ice powers to save Barry from Savitar. And it triggers her, and she goes on a Killer Frost rampage.
Yeah. And in all honesty, I didn't necessarily disagree with everything that she said to Barry.
Same.
Yeah. I mean, it was still, like, really harsh at points, but also not wrong at all. And
I was going to say, that's just my favorite thing that they're doing this season, is that they are continually making sure Barry recognizes the consequences of what he did.
Yeah.
Because it's felt like in the past that when he's done something stupid, it's kind of brushed under the rug. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, you made a mistake. Now they're like, continuously, you made a really stupid decision. It was very selfish. Look how much you hurt all the people around you. And like, I feel like he's gotten the message, but I'm glad that they're not just letting him go.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Iris did give him, like, a really nice little pep talk, just being like, you know, you don't know what would have happened in that other universe, whether, you know, Caitlin would have eventually developed powers of some kind. There's no way of telling, you know, when that might have manifested. There's no way of knowing whether or not Dante would have died at some point in that universe. Like, there's no way of knowing, because it's not in existence anymore. So, and that's not wrong either, but mm-hmm. also, Barry did mess up.
It's good for her to say that, because even though it's good for him to have to face the consequences of his actions, he needs to keep moving forward. And what Iris told him will help him continue moving forward and be better than he was when he made the decision to go back and save his mother. So they're not mutually exclusive. Like, you can be glad that he's facing the consequences while agreeing that he needs to continue moving forward and being the hero and the leader of the team.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would agree with that. But I was really impressed with sort of the split between Caitlin and Killer Frost again. It's and seeing them in direct sort of parallel this time is just so interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that, you know, we're seeing that Killer Frost is not, like, a completely separate personality. It's just her and kind of the breaks that she has inside, like, completely shattering, essentially.
Yeah.
What that looks like when she just goes over the edge of all her pain and everything. And so she is pretty rough when she's evil. But she also got the revelation that Alchemy can take away powers because she wanted to take her powers away. But she tracks down one of the acolytes, and he says that they were all shown a future and she was in it as Killer Frost, so that their master has plans for her.
Yes. What those plans are, we do not know yet, but we know that he has plans for her. And she factors into this future in some way, shape, or form.
Yes. So, and that she did not like.
No.
Because even though she's like kind of, when she's facing her friends, she seems like she's very much like embracing the villain persona. But when she's alone, like it's very clear she wants to get rid of it. So that was also kind of interesting how much of it was show and how much of it wasn't.
Yeah, definitely.
But the other big reveal in this episode is Alchemy's identity. And it's completely and utterly shocking. By which I mean not even a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it's Julian.
Yeah. And before we started recording, I just watched the Flash episode right before we started recording. I haven't been well this week, so kind of put it off. Didn't really feel up to watching anything a little earlier in the week, so I watched The Flash today. And right before we started recording, I said to Caitlin that, like, I'm not shocked, I'm just a little disappointed with the reveal because of, I guess, what Caitlin was saying before, costume fatigue. I don't feel like they need to have this many people who have some kind of like ulterior motive or some kind of power, or they're hiding, or they have some kind of agenda. Like, just, I'd love to see in some of the other shows more like human characters who can still be like an opposing force to Barry and the team, but you know, a foil in like a very human way, because the thing is that being the Flash is such a huge part of Barry, but he's also still trying to live a very human life with his own job and his own like goals in his career as well. Like, so I feel like they're missing a trick a little bit with just ignoring that aspect completely. And yeah, I'm not shocked that it's turning out that Julian in some way is a bad guy in this way, but
because he's Draco Malfoy.
Exactly, but also I feel like they could have done something more interesting with him and Barry and the friendship there.
And something I said to Danya was that, you know, the Flash never has straightforward reveals.
No.
When it seems straightforward, it doesn't turn out to be. Like, we had in the mid-season finale in season one, where like, oh my god, Harrison Wells is the Reverse Flash. And then, hey, there was a lot more to that because he was Eobard Thawne in Harrison Wells' body. And then season two was like, Jay Garrick is not Jay Garrick. He's Hunter Zolomon, who is Zoom. So there's always levels to the twists on the show. So this feels so straightforward that I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop, that there's going to be something else with it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if, like, there was another twist to the twist, because that's kind of their MO. But also, it feels like every season it follows the same pattern. And that, for me, is getting a little bit frustrating.
Now, in this episode, Julian does do a little bit of that human-level foil for Barry, because he blackmails Barry and basically says, like, I will not tell CCPD that Caitlin kidnapped me if you quit. So Barry quits his job.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if he's going to go work at Star Labs now.
I mean, that would make a lot of
funding that.
Yeah.
And giving them paychecks.
Yeah. I mean, it would make a lot of sense if Barry moved to like Star Labs and worked there for a little bit, or I guess did something else. But yeah, I see, that to me was really interesting that, you know, and he did like bring up a very good point that, you know, Barry went to him to essentially cover up what was essentially a crime committed by one of his friends who's a metahuman, because it's more complicated than it just being a straightforward, she did a bad thing, therefore she's bad. And the thing with it is that in Julian's eyes and in the eyes of, you know, his job and the law, what she did was still a crime. So he's not necessarily wrong in what he says to Barry, and therefore, you know, basically being like, you can't make these decisions anymore because you are allowing yourself to get clouded by your personal relationships. And that was really interesting. And then for me, they lost that a little bit when they were like, but he's also the bad guy.
Yeah, though, you know, the way he was like running away when he heard Savitar's voice, it sure seems like he's not a willing follower.
Yeah, he's probably getting blackmailed or, I don't know, or maybe threatened or something.
We know that Julian wishes that he had power, so I wonder if Savitar is saying that if he follows his, you know, instructions, he'll get powers himself.
Huh. Yeah, because Alchemy doesn't actually have powers himself. He was just using an artifact in order to trigger Terrigenesis and other people. Yeah. Yes, that's so interesting.
And that would add a level of humanness to why Julian's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, that's very true. And also would be kind of a little sad because it would be him getting in far too deep in a situation that he has no control over and no real way of getting out of again, because what real power would he have to go up against someone who is basically saying that he's the god of speed?
Yeah, and the way he like fled the hospital, like, you know, it looks like he feels in over his head already.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my current running theory, but I'm sure there's going to be more of a twist to it than that, because The Flash never does straightforward twists.
No, very true.
And that really wasn't even that much of a twist if you were paying any amount of attention.
Yeah, I mean, it was so obvious that it was coming, but I was still being like, do something different!
Gee, the only person who wasn't in the timeline before, and there's a new bad guy. I wonder if the two are the same.
Yeah.
All right, so that was The Flash. So, moving on to Arrow. We had two episodes. So, we had So It Begins and Vigilante. So It Begins features Prometheus kind of upping his kill streak and trying to frame Quentin Lance as Prometheus. And then Vigilante was the introduction of Vigilante, who, as we mentioned in our Supergirl discussion, was out killing criminals. So It Begins. Prometheus, what do we think?
Man, it was so interesting because both of these episodes had such hugely strong ties back to season one. Because, It was in Prometheus, wasn't it, that he was killing people who had names that were connected to Oliver's original kill list, right?
Yes, and so Oliver had to reveal to the team that the Green Arrow was in fact the Hood and that he was basically a serial killer.
Yeah, which didn't go down particularly well with some members of the team.
Nor should it.
No.
Let's say. Because they were under the impression, like, they had been outside of the whole thing when Roy pretended to be the Arrow. Mm-hmm. So they were like, wait, we thought that was someone completely different. So it's kind of, it's a good reminder that, like, people on the outside think that, like, the Green Arrow is somebody different than all those other people, but it's very clear that Prometheus knows the connection between yes. Green Arrow and the Hood and the whole kill list, which means he has to know who Oliver is yes. to know that he had that kill list.
Yeah. Which, you know, thinking back to season one and who that could be, like, again, the only thing I keep thinking is Tommy. Like, I'm really struggling to think of anyone else who would know details, like...
Malcolm. Malcolm wouldn't be hiding under a mask.
No.
He would make his grand entrance. And I just realized Malcolm has not been in an episode so far this season.
Yeah, which is really...
I haven't had to rage about his presence.
Which is really interesting, considering he's, like...
Isn't he's regular on all the shows now.
Yeah, which is really odd.
Yeah, what they're doing with these series regular deals that they did with John Barham and Katie Cassidy and Wentworth Miller, like, is interesting because, like, none of them have been on much of anything yet.
And right.
It seems like they probably just wanted them to get, like, first position so they couldn't, like, do other shows and not show up. And we also know that, like, Malcolm and Captain Cold are going to be in the Legion of Doom, which I guess shows up in the Legends of Tomorrow mid-season finale. So I'm guessing they'll be much more present second half, but it just sort of hit me the other day. I was like, wait, Malcolm hasn't been in an episode all season.
Yep. Which is, like, it's so weird. It's just really weird. Like,
that makes me happy.
Yeah, it's...
No wonder I'm enjoying Arrow this season.
Yeah, it's not like I'm not okay with that, but it just, from the standpoint of, like, him being a series regular, it's really weird that he's not shown up in any episodes yet.
Yeah, but, back to Prometheus. Yeah, so... It's obviously not Quentin.
No. Which I didn't think... I genuinely did not think that that was the way that they were going. I was like, really? Why even bother? Why?
But it's just another hint that whoever Prometheus is knows the connection between Quentin and Oliver and knows that Quentin is off the bandwagon. So, yeah. And is able to use it. So whoever this is, like, is very in tune with what's going on in everyone's lives, which is interesting.
Yeah. I can't think of who would know Oliver's life that intimately, but not only Oliver's life, but his life as the Hood as well, because it's very distinctly someone who would have known about both.
And Helena Bertinelli is still in prison, so I don't think she's involved.
Yeah, it's really hard to try and pinpoint who it could be specifically.
Yeah, most people are either dead or in prison.
Yeah.
Would know. I mean... There's a Lazarus pit, but Nyssa destroyed it, but, you know, in the comics, there are multiple Lazarus pits, so, you know, they can always have that out, or it could be someone who was resurrected prior to the one in Nanda Parbat being destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah. I just kind of want to know already, because I'm, like, that going, not from, like, a perspective of, like, I just want to know. It's mostly because it's driving me crazy that I can't think of anyone from season one bar Tommy that would, like, know things like this.
It's Laurel. You heard it here first. Laurel got resurrected and came back wrong, and now she's Prometheus.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so we have no idea who he is. Vigilante introduces a vigilante who...
I know, it's so weird to say that, isn't it?
I know. I mean, is it a spoiler to say who it is? We didn't say on the show, but Like, it's based on his comic book identity. It's our new DA. We'll say that. It's Adrian Chase. And he was in the episode for like a couple minutes, and he was super shady in those couple of seconds.
So shady. The shadiest.
I find it interesting that knowing that it's him, because when they cast him, they were like, they've cast him as Adrian Chase, aka Vigilante. So, like, that's who it is. That this character who becomes a vigilante because, you know, there was setup for this where he was getting so frustrated with, you know, not being able to do anything and seeing that the vigilantes were getting some measure of success that he wasn't able to, that he would then have no issues with collateral damage. Like, that's very disturbing. That's part of who that character is in the comics. And it kind of, he has this whole, like, downfall arc where he has basically has a breakdown because of all the collateral damage he's caused and people he's hurt. But it is kind of disturbing to think of someone who becomes a vigilante to help people by killing criminals, but then has no issues with, like, innocent people. Oops, get killed in the process of taking down criminals.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also, I mean, the other bit that's interesting about this is what also makes Daredevil so interesting. And it's part of, like, Daredevil that I wish that they would focus on more. It's when you can't get justice within the law, going outside of the law to get it instead. And I find that, like, a fascinating divide in a character, that they're trying to do what's right through the courts and through the justice system, but the justice system is so broken that they then have to go outside of the law to
but
get...
But Laurel was serving that function prior to this.
I know.
They killed her.
I know. I just, but it's such an interesting character arc, you know, to go down.
Very much, like, a mirror to who Oliver was. So, like, this season is very clearly thematically relating, like, a bookending season one.
Yeah.
And Vigilante is basically the hood. And so Oliver is looking at him, and he has this whole, you know, thought through the episode of, like, you know, maybe I had it right all along, and then he realizes he doesn't, and that was not right. But it's interesting, like, seeing Oliver as the Green Arrow, he's finally become that character, and he can look at Vigilante and basically see who he was and see how far that he's come.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is, and it's so interesting this season, like, how closely it's following, like, season one, or how it's, like, folding season one back into it. Which is another interesting thing is, obviously, this is the last year of flashbacks as well, so it's kind of coming full circle from where it started to, I guess not where it ends, but there's going to be a very clear divide now going into potentially next season, where the basic setup of the show, which has always been part present, part flashback, is going to end. So the show is going to shift into territory that's very different in the next season. So it's just, it's really cool that they're tying those two seasons together so much.
And that our big villain is somebody who connects that way. So, like, we have overtly connections and then very clear thematic connections. And yeah. I think it works very well.
Yeah. Yeah,
I've been
really enjoying
these first few episodes this season.
Yeah. We did also get another reveal in these episodes.
Evelyn. Evelyn is working with Prometheus.
Which, you know, there's probably more to it than what is on the surface, having come from Young Justice and what they did with Artemis there as well. Like, there's more to it, probably.
Yes, but that was the last reveal that we were left with, that Evelyn is apparently a double agent for Prometheus. So we'll find out more, but I think Arrow's been quite good this first, but I thought Arrow, the first half of Arrow season 4 was quite good, and then it fell apart. So
yeah,
I'm still very cautiously optimistic. Like these first 7 episodes, I've really liked, and I'm just hoping they can keep it up.
Yeah, here's hoping that they remain consistent, which consistency is something that Arrow struggles with a lot.
Yes. And also just shout out to Constantine Kovar.
Yes.
And I don't know why Oliver thinks he can kill Ivan Drago, but, you know, whatever.
You, Oliver.
Dude killed Apollo Creed, so I don't know why you think you have a shot. Just saying. But I've been enjoying Dolph Lundgren so far in the flashbacks. And yeah, that was the big twist in the flashbacks, was that he's working with the Bratva. So Oliver goes into the Bratva like to get his whole revenge quest, and then the Bratva's working with the guys. So.
I know. It's...
Dang it.
Womp, womp, womp.
And Constantine Kovar had Tyana's family employed. Found out. That was another part of it. He went in to get revenge for Tyana, and then, like, her mother walks in, like, and, like, they're very close. Like, okay.
So, yeah, very, very close.
Yeah. So, Kovar, like, he's dangerous, he knows his shit, so I like him.
Yeah, formidable opponent, yeah. I think.
Yeah. Alright, so, and then our last TV show is Legends of Tomorrow, so we had Compromised, which was when the team went back to 1987, and Outlaw Country, when they went back to the Old West and reunited with our old friend Jonah Hex.
Yes.
So... Compromised, because several characters are compromised, including Sarah, who has to deal with her whole revenge bit because Damian Dark is in 1987, working basically with the Reagan administration, and he's also making secret deals with the Soviets.
Yes. So...
But she gets this boss-ass ending where she finally realizes that she can't kill him. And so when there's the whole confrontation at the end of the episode, she confronts him. And then she tells him, this is how your life ends. Like,
yeah.
It's brutal glory. And he was just like, holy shit.
Yes.
And it was awesome. Except... She kind of made things worse because that is what pushed Damian Dark to decide to team up with the Reverse Flash, which will probably create the Legion of Doom. So it was a badass moment, but I think it just made things worse.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, as cool as it was seeing her taking down Damian Dark a peg or two to be like, this is how you die. Which was epic. Like, it was so chilling, that moment, because it's so cruel to basically tell him that just as he feels like he's achieving his life goal, it is literally all ripped away from him. Like, everything. His goal, his family, his life. But again, very short-sighted, because it made him desperate. And that desperation throws him into the team up with the Reverse Flash, that the Reverse Flash had been seeking that out and trying to convince him to team up with him. And he's like, no, I work alone. I've got this plan. And yeah, I feel like that's going to create a rift somewhere, because it's a change in the whole timeline now.
Did this just completely wipe out Arrow season 4? Like,
yeah, that's going to be interesting, because this is different. This is definitely not what happened previously. This is a new direction for Damian Dark. And I feel like it's fundamentally going to change him as a character because of what he knows about the Reverse Flash and what's going to happen with, like, everything here. So unless they, like, wipe his memory in some way, this is going to fundamentally change who Damian Dark is and how he operates.
You know, it'd be interesting if this is what, like, if it wipes out season four, if it revives Laurel.
Yeah. And that's how she becomes a series regular?
Yeah, I think she's supposed to start showing more up at mid-season, so...
Yeah, which, you know, okay, that's interesting. But also, it technically wouldn't... Because they said that she's not going to be revived, right? She's not going to be... Like, they were very specific in the wording that they chose about...
But she wouldn't be resurrected if season four got wiped
yeah,
out.
Yeah, exactly.
That didn't happen.
This is what I mean, is that they were very specific about the wording regarding Laurel's fate. But, yeah, like you said, if the timeline shifts to the point that, like, what happened in that season just didn't happen, then she's not resurrected, so to speak. She's just still alive.
So everyone gets mad at Barry for making Flashpoint, and then the Legends just did the same thing.
Basically.
Apparently. That's just, like, the time travel between Flash and Legends just, like, does not seem to match up with me.
No. Other people who make terrible decisions in timelines is Martin Stein when he's, like, interacting with his younger self. Because he gets so frustrated at his younger self, he just, like, goes off on him. And that's creating aberrations in his life.
Yeah, it looks like he didn't marry Clarissa.
Yeah.
Like, that poor woman.
Is getting such a rough time of it, like...
God, I just feel so bad for her.
Yeah.
So, it sounds like that's gonna play a part in the crossover, since it talks about the aberration. So, nice job, Stein. The best part of that episode was when Ray was trying to, like, disarm the bomb, and Mick... They're like, there's less than 10 seconds, so he just starts eating in a Claire. And he's like, could be worse ways to go. I love him so much.
And when he has the jelly beans as well.
God, I love him so much.
Yeah.
Who knew that he would be such a treasure? He started out as such a caricature, and now he's, like, one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, it's... And, yeah, I miss Leonard a lot. A lot. I still, like, really feel like that's... There's a Leonard Snart-shaped hole in my heart. It's it's very painful. But I will say that having Mick outside of the shadow of Leonard a little bit has really highlighted how great he is as a character.
Mm-hmm. And he was, like, starting that already with, basically, after he's revealed as Kronos. Like, that's when his really great arc started.
Yeah.
And saw it, but it's just gotten better this season. Like, it was beginning and has gotten even better. And he's just delightful. There's our word.
Delightful.
And he is delightful.
Yeah.
Speaking of delightful, in the second episode, the team goes back to the Old West, where a Time Pirate's, like, tracker of dwarf star alloy gets caught by a crime lord in the Old West. So they go and team up with Jonah Hex and stop it, which is fun. And Jonah is very surprised to see that Sarah's leading the team and not Rip.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, I was reading an interview with him that said that he was written out of Legends this season so he could film the last season of Broadchurch. So they wrote him out so he could do that. But
he does, that's interesting.
Like, does come back in some way, but he can't talk about it. But,
okay.
So they were giving him the time off to go film Broadchurch.
Yeah. Huh.
So... That's why he was written out, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, he doesn't have to come back. Because...
The show's been working really well I haven't felt like I've missed him the way that I've missed, like, Leonard, and the way that, you know, I've missed other characters on other shows, so...
I feel like Sarah slid so seamlessly into the role of the captain, and I feel like she works better in that role because she has the respect of the team, which I don't think Rip actually had, because he was kind of a douche.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very selfish. Like, their whole mission last season was all about him, basically.
Yeah.
So, I feel like Sarah has the respect of the team in a way that he never did. And so, just their dynamic is so... It works a lot better, I feel like, with her in charge.
Yeah. No, I think she's a very natural leader. She feels... She just fits. She just... She fits so well in that role. And she works so well with all of the different characters. And she doesn't... When she's tried to impose, like, her almost selfish goal to go after Damian Dark, she tried to do it outside of the team without getting them involved. So she was working in secret. So she's never tried to use the team for her own gain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, when it's happened, like, different members of the team have kind of intervened, just showing how much they, like, they care about her. Because first it was Ray, and then it was Stein. Like, you have different members of the team kind of trying to help her out. So, you know, I just feel like the dynamic is much improved this season, honestly, without Rip. So I would not mind if, like... he didn't come back, or if he came back and was demoted. Like, sorry, we've been following Sarah. She's really our captain.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I wonder how he'd react to that.
I mean, he did, like, put her in charge temporarily in season one, so he probably wouldn't be all that surprised.
Yeah, no, that's true.
It might actually work because... You know, he just wasn't very good at the whole Time Lord thing.
No. So,
like, despite, like, supposedly being really great, like, he really, like, in action was not. So he might like not having all that pressure.
And the responsibility.
Yeah.
And... That would actually be really interesting if he did come back, to see him fit into a different role where he's less of a leader, more of a team player, I guess. Huh. That shift in dynamic could be interesting, to see him have to just give up that responsibility to kind of just go with the flow, I guess, and not have to feel that pressure anymore.
Yeah, though, I'm not sure, like, what niche he fills anymore. Like, you have, we have our new historian, Nate. So we don't really need, like, whatever insight that Rip can share.
Mm.
Like, you know, and if he's not really the captain anymore, like, what purpose does he bring to the team anymore? Everyone has their own little niche, like history or science or pyromaniac or whatever. Like, where does he fit?
Oh, that's a very good question.
Yeah, like, they feel like they work so well right now that I'm just not sure where he fits in terms of it. Like, maybe they rescue him and then he's like, well, you guys look like you're doing a good job. I'm out of here. I don't know. It's interesting to think about, but, yeah, so Jonah Hex, were you happy to see Jonah Hex again?
I was. I was actually really into him and Sarah and their relationship. Like, I really enjoyed, like, them going back and forth all the time. And he was so into her.
And he liked that she was not taking his crap.
Yeah.
I loved that. Yeah.
Low-key ship it. Not gonna lie. Yeah. I kind of low-key ship Sarah with, like, everyone, though.
One thing that I've noticed is that the show is doing a lot to, like, say, like, you know, Sarah's into ladies, which I appreciate, but she's actually bi.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, she does, like, she was in a relationship with Oliver. Like, she does like dudes, too.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be like, we need more representation of men and women, but it's just sort of like...
Yeah, it's not a bad thing to show that she's attracted to both. And
yeah, it just feels like they're just going from to one side when...
Yeah,
and... like, it's fair to be, like, both sides because she does like men and women.
I mean, as someone who identifies as bisexual, like, I will go through periods where, like, especially if I've been through, like, a breakup or just had a bad experience, I will sometimes, like, lean one way more than the other for a little bit. But it doesn't mean that I'm not attracted to both anymore. It's just that sometimes I distance myself if something feels too painful. But, you know, which could be maybe what's happening with her after what happened with Leonard. Snart.
That could be. But it's been more like, you know, the other characters making comments. Like, Mick in this episode was like the, you know, the Philly who was into other Phillies.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I kind of just, like, dig her chemistry with everyone. But I don't want them to, I don't want them to forget that she's attracted to both. Because, unfortunately, with bisexual representation in shows, it does usually end up being that they forget that they're attracted to one or other of the sex. And suddenly, when they're in a relationship, like, full on, they kind of, like, try to categorize it as they're either straight or they're gay. And it's really frustrating because that's not how it works.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's like, I don't want them to erase her identity as a bi woman.
Yeah.
Which, it, you know, I appreciate, like, they're very much going out of their way to, like, let her have action with other women, which, glad to see it. But, you know, her identity is as a bi woman, so...
Yeah.
But yeah. So, just kind of a random thoughts. But yeah, that was fun. And Ray, at the end of the day, gets some Dwarf Star Ally that he can power, like, a whole bunch of Atom suits with it.
Yeah.
So, though I'm kind of not... I don't know. I don't feel like they spent enough time without him having a suit.
Yeah. I agree with that. I was actually really enjoying seeing how he was, like, building up his confidence and figuring out how he worked in the team and that he's more than just the suit. And so I feel like him getting it back is a little too quick. But then again, they are literally about to head into a giant alien invasion storyline. So they kind of probably had to expedite it a little bit because... alien invasion.
Yeah, he would have been kind of useless without his Atom suit. That's true. And Nate gets... Ray makes Nate a suit.
Oh my
god.
So
Ray pulls a Cisco.
Okay. I don't dislike the suit, but the weird shoulder pad thing that's going on with the weird gap is, like... It looks strange. Like... On the whole, I kind of like the style of it. I think it looks cool. There are some weird gaps in it that are kind of showing off skin in really weird ways.
Chalk that up to Ray not being as experienced as Cisco or Wynn at making suit.
Maybe Ray is like, I just want to see a flash of skin. Jesus.
Ray Palmer, also bisexual.
You know, I would not hate that.
I mean, I tend to just assume everybody is bisexual on these shows, so...
Yeah, until they, like, say otherwise. Yeah.
And so, even then, I'm like, yeah, but you know.
But both. Both is good.
Both is good, exactly. But yeah, so, the very end of the episode is Sarah interrupting the bromance with... I loved that moment where she was like, are you guys done broing out? They're like, not really. It's just, it works. It's working so well this season and everyone's dynamic. But Sarah's like, our friends in 2016 need our help. Which, I don't know why someone couldn't have told her, like, your father is off the wagon. You need to get back here.
Yeah.
But that ended that. They're headed back to fight aliens.
Yes.
So, yeah. That was television for the week, or the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Movie headlines, then. We don't have much. Just another cast member joining Black Panther. So, Angela Bassett has been cast in the movie, and basically, this movie is going to be so cool. They've got so many amazing, amazing actors and actresses in this film. But Angela Bassett has joined the cast. My God, as Ramonda, the mother of T'Challa. Who
get in my eyeballs now.
Yeah, we've got some really great people in this cast. So, Danai Gurira, Forrest Whitaker, Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o, Martin Freeman as, like, the token white guy. Because literally everyone else is black. Like, Martin Freeman as Everett Ross is basically the one white guy showing up in this movie.
Which is sort of appropriate for Martin Freeman.
Yeah, very true. But, yeah, I just really need this movie to happen already. I'm so ready for it.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. That's it, though. There was no other movie news. So I'll move on to Comic Corner, which is appropriate considering the Inhumans news that we got as well. Steph Francis, aka Prank Sinatra, which I love that Twitter username right now. That's so great. Did ask for some Black Bolt recommendations, and yes, of course you can have some Black Bolt recommendations. So as always, the links for these will be in the show notes, so just jump on there if you need to get a link through for where to buy these. But let's just get through them really quickly. So the first recommendation I have for Black Bolt is just Inhumans. So it's a trade paperback collecting the first 12 issues of the Inhumans Origins, and this is a story by Paul Jenkins, and it basically lays essential groundwork in introducing Black Bolt and the characters that surround him, as well as outlines his motivations and powers. And as they always say, the beginning is kind of a good place to start, and Inhumans is basically where it all began. The next one is Silent War. This follows on from the incidents in Son of M, which, while is interesting, is not really essential reading. Basically, Quicksilver stole the Terrigen Mists that give the Inhumans their powers, and Black Bolt declared war on humanity as a result. So the only thing standing in their way, basically, is the Fantastic Four, of all people. And they kind of come to blows, both mentally and physically. This was quite a short-lived series, but it did lay a good foundation for, like, future titles, especially revelations that happen in future titles. Next one is Secret Invasion Inhumans. After a reveal that changed everyone's perception of Black Bolt in New Avengers Illuminati, the Inhumans go on the search for their king. This four-issue series mostly serves as a setup for War of Kings, but is still fairly enjoyable as a standalone. Though it doesn't focus as heavily on Black Bolt himself, it does involve him as a central driving force to the story. Which leads me into War of Kings. So the Inhumans basically go cosmic in this series as Black Bolt and his team take over the Kree Empire, and Vulcan, the power-mad brother of Cyclops, has become the Emperor of the Shi'ar, the most advanced military force in the galaxy. So it features many a familiar face in the cosmic Marvel universe, as several teams come together to stop all-out war between the Inhumans and the Shi'ar. And then that leads into Realm of Kings, which is a direct follow-up to the events in War of Kings, and deals with the fallout of Black Bolt's actions at the end of that series. The Inhuman royal family is still reeling and struggling to retain their rule over the Kree, and this collection has several mini-series included in it, focusing on different sets of characters and, as Marvel is well known for, has a few twists up its sleeves. And that's it. That's all of my Black Bolt recommendations. So if you check any of them out, let me know on Twitter at Hero High Podcast, or drop an email, or feel free to hit me up on my personal Twitter if you want to as well, which is just virtual_Don. I'm always happy to talk about comics as you're reading them, or after you've read them, whichever you prefer. But that's it. So, feedback. We got a few pieces of feedback since the last episode. Caitlin, would you like to get the first one?
Sure. Andrea B. at Timey Wimey Daffy, which is a great Twitter handle, said, Emmy is listening to Hero Hype Podcast. I'm with Virtual Dawn when it comes to Julian. Sigh. And yeah, totally Draco. He's such a he's so Draco Malfoy.
Yeah, she did follow it up, like, immediately after by being like, also, all the Supergirl ships, everyone has so much chemistry and there is so much tension, the good kind, which, you know, as someone who also ships all of the ships, like, I'm so not fussy when it comes to shipping things. I'm right there with you. I am basically that meme that's basically ship all the things.
But if all else fails, more poly, less threesome, or less triangles.
Yes, more threesomes, less triangles. Yeah. Make love, not ship wars.
Exactly.
Michael said, best superhero news of the year, hope you guys will cover this, and linked us to the Young Justice news, which, you know, yes, basically, you will have to be prying that out of our cold, dead hands. We're going to be covering it. There's, like, no question about that. I feel like I've waited a lifetime.
Donia was asleep when the news broke, so I was, like, writing it up as soon as I saw it. I'm like, this is happening.
Yeah.
We will cover this. Even if, like, I will cover it for the site, we will talk about it on the podcast. It
yeah,
will happen.
It's happening. It's definitely happening. Be really interesting if it does turn out to be like a Netflix show, if they do, like, if they drop it all at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that's how Netflix tends to work.
Yeah. Although some shows, like over here, for example, Netflix have deals with, like, some American TV shows, like, for example, Designated Survivor is on Netflix for us in the UK, and we get that every week. So they will release an episode every week. The same happened with Shadowhunters. They did the same.
Well, because it's airing live in the US, I would assume, so.
Yeah, so while it's airing in the US. Whoa. That was unexpected.
Same.
Holy crap, hold on. Okay, cool. Yeah, so while it's airing in the US, it then releases on Netflix weekly for us.
Can't hear you at all.
Oh, really? Crap. How about now?
Okay, now I can hear you.
Okay, cool. Right, I'll say that again. Yeah, so while it's airing in the US, it then releases an episode weekly on Netflix. So there is precedent in some aspects to release like a weekly show. So I don't know how they play it.
I don't either, but that would be depending on if Netflix got it.
Yeah, that's like, true.
I just have a very hard time after Cartoon Network's treatment of the show, like, it going back to that network.
Yeah, I wouldn't want it to go back to Cartoon Network. They don't deserve it. Like, yeah, no.
They probably don't even want it.
Probably not. They seem to be more interested in targeting boys than anything else, which kind of sucks, because I used to watch a lot of Cartoon Network shows as a kid. But, hey, whatever. I get Young Justice back, so I'm like, whatever.
Yay!
Yes. So, question of the week. We didn't get any answers to our previous question of the week. Which was, how would you lure in your doppelganger? But we do have a new one for this week, which, Caitlin, would you like to get it?
Yep. In honor of Thanksgiving here in the U.S., we are asking what you are thankful for this year in superheroes. It's been a pretty crappy year otherwise, but there have been some decent things superhero-wise. What are you thankful for, Danya?
I am thankful for you. Because you are technically part of this year in superheroes. I'm thankful for you and for being here and basically doing Hero Hype with me.
And I'm thankful to be on Hero Hype as a full-time host.
Yeah.
And now, also for Sarah Lance.
Yeah, so now that we're done being, like, super mushy and emotional, if you want to answer the question of the week, you know where we are on Twitter, at HeroHypePodcast, or drop us an email on HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com. But until next week, you know, I'm like, touch wood, schedule allowing, and neither of us getting sick again next week. I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we'll see you next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.